conspiracy to distribute cocaine and money laundering. He appealed his conviction for conspiracy to distribute cocaine. And this panel, I believe, reversed that conviction and sent it back to the district court for resentencing. At the time of his first sentencing, the district court imposed a sentence of 293 months on the conspiracy to distribute cocaine case, 240 months on the money laundering charge, and that was so high because two sentences were grouped together.
And that explains the difference between the sentence attributable to the money laundering in the first trial and the second. Is that correct? The
grouping? Yes, Your Honor. As I see it, that because they were grouped together, the money laundering base offense level went from 27 up to 35 because it was grouped with the conspiracy.
And didn't that mean because of that the district court had to resentence on the money laundering?
Yes.
To adjust the offense level since it was no longer grouped?
I think it was necessary to resentence for that purpose, to resentence based upon the correct standing alone offense level.
So how can you say that our mandate on remand did not permit resentencing on the money laundering count?
I think it was your remand.
Right.
Obviously, I won't tell you what, I won't presume to tell you what you meant, but clearly he had to be resentenced at a base offense level of 27. I don't believe that you intended, and you will correct me if I'm wrong, that the district court should re-examine the issue of whether or not that sentence should be consecutive or concurrent to the California sentence. And that's really the main issue that we have here today. When the district court originally sentenced him the first time, he was serving a California sentence of 263 months. And the court ran both the money laundering and the conspiracy sentence concurrent with that unexpired term of imprisonment. The effect was a net of 30 months in addition to the California case. When the case was remanded and the court resentenced, the court some things had changed. Of course, the conspiracy case is out of the picture. 293 months is gone. The California case had apparently been amended, and I represented to the district court that it had been amended to 151 months. At the time of the sentencing, the U.S. attorney had some questions about that and argued that it wasn't in the record. But in his brief, he acknowledges that the California sentence had been reduced to 151 months. And I believe it has been, although it's not in the record. I think we all agree.
So that's between the parties that we can proceed on the view that it is 151 months, the California sentence?
I've seen the amended judgment myself, and I don't think that the district court disputes that. So that changed. In addition, the base offense level for the money laundering charge had dropped from 35 down to 27. The sentencing range for money laundering at base offense level 27, criminal history category 4, was something around 125 months, and the judge imposed a sentence of 120 months. But the judge re-examined the question of whether or not that should be concurrent or consecutive to the California sentence. Now, in the original sentence, Mr. Rivera got not a single day added to his sentence for his money laundering charge. It was completely subsumed by the California case. At resentencing, he got a 10-year sentence, 120 months, on top of the California case. His sentence went from effectively zero to 10 years in prison. And the question that is before the court today is that, is there some constitutional impediment to that? And I've argued that there are two. The first would be the due process, the double jeopardy clause to the United States Constitution, Fifth Amendment, which recognizes and protects the interest of finality in sentencing at some point. And the Seventh Circuit case of the United States versus Dadino and the United States Supreme Court case of DeFrancesca say that point arrives when the appeal process is over. Now, in this case, Mr. Rivera didn't appeal his money laundering conviction. He didn't appeal his money laundering sentence. The United States didn't appeal either one of those two things and did not appeal the district court's determination that the money laundering case should be concurrent with the California case. At least by the time this court issued its mandate after the first appeal, the appeal was terminated with respect to that money laundering conviction. And Mr. Rivera had a constitutional right protected by the Due Process Clause against running the gauntlet twice, as this court has phrased it in the cases of Binford, United States versus Binford, quoting from Pierce, I believe, that the theory of double jeopardy is that a person need run the gauntlet only once. The gauntlet is the risk of a range of punishment which the state or federal government imposes for that particular conduct. In opposition to that principle, we have the principle of the sentencing package, which the government relies on in its brief and which I've discussed in my brief. The sentencing package concept says that when a case is remanded, the district court can readjust the sentence to reflect his original intent. I don't know how much vitality that principle has left after the Binford case, but in this case, I think the judge's original intent was to give him a concurrent sentence. I don't think that the sentencing package concept helps the government here at all, because what the judge did on the second sentencing was contrary to what his original intent was. Be that as it may, I don't think that the sentencing package concept has much vitality left because of the sentencing guidelines. We have this procedure now where sentencing is based upon quantifiable bits. And the cases I've cited indicate that the concept of the sentencing package is on its last legs, I believe. And I believe this court should make it clear that it's a conceptual fiction which contradicts the double jeopardy protection and should do away with it. I believe also that the judge gave him a longer sentence than he gave him the first time. We can talk about what the bottom line is here. The first sentence he got was 30 years on top of his California sentence. 30 months on top of his California sentence. The sentence he got the second time was 90 months on top of his
California sentence.
Total time went down.
Right.
But you would expect it to, because 293 months has been vacated. And that's where I think we're talking about semantics here.
Well, I know it's vacated, but I mean, as opposed to what he got sentenced at first and now he's been resentenced, comparing those two, what's the difference?
Well, the first sentence was a net 293 months.
Right.
The second sentence was a net 151 plus 120 months.
Right.
So, yes, time went down, but it should have, because he's not guilty.
How do we deal with vindictiveness on that issue, as far as the Pierce matter?
I don't think that it's a question of... He got a longer sentence on the money laundering charge the second time than he did on the first time. And there were no facts to explain the greater difference. There were some things the judge said about, well, we're going to keep him off the street as long as we can. but there's no identifiable conduct that the defendant did in the meantime. There's no further facts before the judge that he didn't know the first time to justify. Giving him a 10-year sentence when the first time he gave him zero. And there's a presumption of vindictiveness that arises under that circumstance.
Well, didn't the judge have in mind a general custody when he made his original sentence? And obviously he did.
30 months on top of California.
Right. So he envisioned a period of time. I understand that the package is obviously altered when it goes back and gets unbundled and reexamined. But at base, do we have a judge who's seeking to enhance custody over what he had done originally?
I think so. Because he gave him an additional 80 months on top of California, and the first time he gave him 30 months on top of California.
Well, he had a different recognition of what the California sentence was.
Perhaps he did. It's not clear from the record whether he understood that at that time or not, but I'm willing to acknowledge the sentence change.
I mean, we can only back up from the sentence what he had in mind.
We
could always remand it again, I suppose, and if that were required, but I'm just looking at the absolutes of it all.
Well, I don't think he should get a longer sentence the second time around, simply because the judge felt that he needed to be off the streets for a while. I think he should. He considered the factors in the sentencing guideline and the statute vis-a-vis consecutive versus concurrent, and nothing changed except for the fact that he was found not guilty of an offense. And I don't think he should be punished because he was found not guilty of an offense. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Brinson. Mr. Brooklyn?
May it please the court, you have to pardon me, I lost my voice a couple of days ago in a summer cold, but Mr. Brinson, just to clear a couple things up, the defendant the first time around, his bottom line for sentencing, his California sentence that had already been imposed, his money laundering count, his conspiracy, all taken into consideration by the district court, his bottom line was 293 months. This is the amount of time that the judge felt was appropriate for a defendant based on the facts of his conduct, money laundering and drug dealing, his background as far as being in the country illegally, being previously convicted of drug dealing, and the guidelines as they applied at that time. So the court found that the appropriate sentence for his background and based on his conduct was 293 months. On remand, the court considered the same facts, the same background, and tried to come up with an appropriate sentence. And essentially nothing had changed on remand other than the legal issue of whether the defendant was a conspirator in a drug organization that was distributing cocaine in southwestern Indiana, or whether he was simply a distributor of cocaine that was coming back to southwestern Indiana. And on the second time around, the court considered these same facts and the same background. The guidelines had been recalculated, as the court noted. They had to be recalculated because the circumstances had changed and there was no longer a grouping of closely related counts. And the second time around, the defendant received 120 months consecutive. Now, this was, as the court noted, 22 months less than the bottom line that the defendant had received the first time around. So bottom line to bottom line, the defendant received 22 months less, essentially for the only reason, because of this technical legal difference between being a conspirator or just being a distributor and not involved in the organization as a conspirator. So I think from that standpoint, the issues of double jeopardy and the vindictiveness issue really don't hold any water. Now, as I believe the defense counsel indicated, I don't believe there's any dispute that the defendant's sentence in the California case is 151 months. And was 151 months at the time of resentencing. I've also looked at the record from the Central District of California, and I would agree that he is sentenced at 151 months for his California case. And I believe that, as I understand it, the appellant has conceded that the case would have to be, the money laundering count would have to be resentenced because of the unbundling, in essence, because of the closely related counts, grouping of closely related counts. So the only real issue, which is very limited as I see it, is whether or not this court's mandate allowed for the court to reconsider consecutive versus concurrent time. And under the, contrary to appellant's argument, I would assert that the concept of sentence packaging is alive and well in the Seventh Circuit, and I would point the court to the United States versus Noble decision as the most recent case in a long line of cases that have accepted and put forth the sentencing package concept. Noble was a August 2002 case. It's almost squarely on point. And the issue in Noble was a defendant who was convicted of conspiracy to deal, to distribute a narcotics, and also a substantive count of distributing narcotics. At his original sentencing, he was sentenced to 30 months on the conspiracy count, in addition, and a 5 months concurrent, or yeah, 5 years concurrent, 30 years, I should say, on the conspiracy count, and 5 years concurrent on the distributing count. After an Apprendi challenge, the conspiracy count was cut back to 20 years, and the case was remanded for resentencing. On the remand, the district court, considering the same basic facts and the same defendant's background, decided that they still wanted to give this defendant 30 years. The court resentenced the defendant to 20 years, the maximum after a post-Apprendi on the conspiracy count, but then adjusted the substantive count to 10 years and ran those two counts consecutive rather than concurrent, coming back to the 30-year sentence. And this court found that that was appropriate, that the sentencing package dictated that the court could do that and indeed should do that in order to achieve an appropriate, what it thought was an appropriate sentence based on the conduct that the defendant was brought to court for and his background. And that's a, you know, that's an issue that defendants have to face when they take up a purely legal and a very a discrete legal issue on appeal. But basically, that case, as well as a long line of other cases, and I can cite the court, but those are in our brief, established that the packaging concept is alive and well in the Seventh Circuit. Your Honors, I would submit that I would ask this court to affirm the resentencing in this matter, and if there's no other questions, I won't use the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brookman. Mr. Brimson, your time has expired, but you may have a minute, if you wish, for rebuttal.
I don't think it's valid to compare the bottom line to the bottom line in this case and say that, well, because he received less net years, that he has no constitutional right to a non-vindictive sentence or to a sentence which is protected under the principles of finality. The bottom line and the bottom line don't compare in this case because the big count of conviction was kicked out. How can you compare a man sentence for money laundering to a man who's convicted of conspiracy to distribute cocaine and money laundering? He got 293 months originally for the cocaine, and that's gone. And you can't say, well, because he got somewhat less than 293 months, he suffered no violation. With respect to the Noble case, the appellant there did not make the same arguments that I'm making here. He did not raise double jeopardy. He did not raise vindictive sentencing. He got exactly the same sentence the first time and the second time. My client got 120 months more the second time. In addition, the language in Noble, which is classic sentencing package language, was basically unnecessary to the holding because the case was remanded for resentencing on unrelated grounds dealing with the reliability of the information dealing with the amount of drugs. Also, Noble cited a case called Walker, which was decided in 1997, the same year as Binford, and I believe there's a conflict between Binford and Walker.
I'm going to have to ask you to conclude, Mr. Brimson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Well, I didn't want to cut your thought off if you have one last thought.
Go ahead. And I think that the crucial difference is in Noble. Mr. Noble got 30 years before, 30 years after. Mr. Rivera got 0 years the first time. On the only case, the only count for which he is convicted, he got 0 years the first time, and he got 120 months the second time.
Our thanks to both counsel. Mr. Brimson, a special thanks from the court for your accepting this appeal and ably representing Mr. Rivera. Case is taken under advisement.